All right, good afternoon to you. 306 here at News Talk 105.9 WMAL, where we are making sense of the news. Great to have you with us. Coming up, 3:30, Jason Johnson is with us, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, and he will chat with us about George Soros prosecutors nationwide making the country so much more unsafe. How did that happen? Jason Johnson will explore it with us. Also at 4 o'clock, Owen Jensen, the White House correspondent for the Catholic EWTN cable network, will talk to us about his questions for the White House this week as the White House says Catholics should pay for abortions nationwide. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya is here at 4:30 from Stanford School of Medicine. We'll talk about this dangerous gain-of-function research finally getting a look in the United States Senate this week. Jason Meares is here, 5 o'clock. He's the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Lots to talk to him about. And Julie Kelly is here as well at 5:30. She's with American Greatness, and she was keeping track of a Senate hearing today with the FBI Director Christopher Wray. We've got a lot to get to. We've got a lot to get to. And if you'd like to be part of it, you can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. Let's start with Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis yesterday stepping up to the microphone, once again, as always, flanked by all sorts of civil servants and people who work within the state government, standing behind him and slamming anyone who would call themselves a doctor and then mutilate a child as a part of what they refer to as a sex change operation. DeSantis ripping this practice yesterday and saying that these doctors need to be sued for betraying their oath and for hurting children. Here's Ron DeSantis yesterday.
Talk about these very young kids getting gender-affirming care. They don't tell you what that is they're actually giving very young girls double mastectomies. They want to castrate these young boys. That's wrong. And so we've stood up and said, both from the health and children well-being perspective, you know, you don't disfigure 10, 12, 13-year-old kids based on gender dysphoria. 80% of it resolves anyways by the time they get older. So why would you be doing this? I think these doctors need to get sued for what's happening. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'd go a step further. Put sex offender signs out in front of their house, would you? Just, you know, let the community know they're there so long as they're walking free. Maybe keep your kids away. Stop them from getting close to schools. Boy, Ron DeSantis coming out yesterday and saying they need to be sued. The left hates this guy for these positions. They slandered his effort at stopping this radical sexual ideology from being injected into the schools. They were calling it the Don't Say Gay Bill. No, it's the parents should be involved in their child's education bill. It's the schools should be teaching math and English and history bill. And stop trying to propagandize young children, young impressionable children, with your radical sexual theories, including that they are a mistake, that their bodies are mistakes. So DeSantis, one of only a few actual elected public officials to boldly stand up against this and say, whatever, call me transphobic, who cares? I'm the one who's being empathetic towards children. I'm the one who's actually caring about their well-being. You are the one that's leading them down the road of destruction. You are the one who's abandoning them, teaching them to think that their body's a mistake. How dare you? And stop getting in between parents and their children. Thank you very much. So DeSantis says that yesterday. Now, among the people who dislike what DeSantis said is a certain state attorney in out of Hillsborough County, Florida, that's the home of Tampa, Florida. His name is Andrew Warren. Now, Andrew Warren, state attorney, has already promised over and over and over again that he's not going to enforce the law. He will not prosecute crimes related to abusing children with this radical sexual ideology. Or, for instance, he won't enforce the law when it comes to having children survive abortion. He's not going to enforce Florida's abortion restrictions. He said so out loud. Here we have USA Today's write-up, the Tallahassee Democrat being the paper that's publishing this. They say, following the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in June to undo Roe versus Wade in the Dobbs decision, Warren joined dozens of state prosecutors nationwide in saying that they would not pursue criminal charges against women seeking abortions. Quote, and nobody's even advocating for this. Quote, not all of us agree on a personal or moral level on the issue of abortion, but, Warren said, along with these other state attorneys, we stand together in our firm belief that prosecutors have a responsibility to refrain from using limited criminal legal system resources to criminalize personal medical decisions. Okay. Let me just back up for a second. That little caveat that you have at the top of the sentence where you're like, yeah, some of us have a problem with abortion, but we don't think you should criminalize personal medical decisions, they say at the end. Well, then, if you have a problem with abortion, can you enunciate what that problem would be? Would it be that there's another life involved? Is that possibly the problem that you're trying to lay out? That is obviously the problem. They just don't want to say it out loud. And so if that's the case, how is this a, quote, personal medical decision? They don't try and resolve it. So this guy, Andrew Warren, has said, I'm not enforcing the law. If you had an employee and you asked him to do something, or if you had rules at your company, which I'm sure you do, and the employee says, to hell with the rules, I'm not doing them, what are the consequences for that? If they don't show up to do their job, or if they're handed a stack of paper like, hey, process all of this, and they don't process it, they don't actually do it, what are the consequences for something like that? Should there be consequences at all? Well, yeah, in any normal functioning organization, there are consequences for you being asleep at the switch and not doing your job, especially when lives are on the line. If prosecutors don't do their jobs, cities become more unsafe. It's a very straightforward proposition. If criminals know that they can get away with crime, then they will. You don't prevent crime by signing a permission slip to commit crimes. And yet, that's what a guy like this dude, Andrew Warren, did. State attorney in Hillsborough County. So Ron DeSantis today, again, I invoke DeSantis for obvious reasons here. Everybody should be taking a page out of this guy's book. Working within the confines of the law, doing nothing outside the law, using his job effectively, and saying if you're not going to do your job, well, in Florida, the governor is allowed to suspend you from your job. And that's what Ron DeSantis announced today.
The Constitution of Florida has vested the veto power in the governor, not in individual state attorneys. And so when you flagrantly violate your oath of office, when you make yourself above the law, you have violated your duty, you have neglected your duty, and you are displaying a lack of competence to be able to perform those duties. And so today we are suspending State Attorney Andrew Warren, effective immediately.
They're suspending him, effective immediately. So that's good news. That's just basically say, okay, you're not going to do your job. Guess whose power it is to knock you out? It's mine. And so he does. And now, of course, this will go, not of course, but I'll let you know. This does go to the Florida State Senate. They're going to render judgment on all of this. But that happens months down the line. That's going to happen months from now. In the meantime, DeSantis was able to appoint somebody that he has faith in and trust in Hillsborough County. They're going to handle the job in the interim, which means Tampa, Florida will become safer as a result of that, because you'll have somebody who's actually enforcing the law. The practice of a guy like this Andrew Warren and all these other Soros-backed and funded prosecutors across the country, for instance, and all of the other, you know, people who come from the or cut from the same cloth, they're all just not enforcing laws that are on the books. This is the Soros. We're going to talk about this coming up here with Jason Johnson just minutes away. But the Soros philosophy is, why do I have to buy legislators when I can buy litigators? I don't have to own your state legislature. I don't have to own the Congress. I don't have to own the presidency. I don't have to spend all that money to win those races. In fact, those races are very high-dollar affairs to begin with, especially the statewide races, the senators, president of the United States, governor, all of those things. I don't have to play in those races. I can save myself money by buying up prosecutors. Because if I buy prosecutors, guess what I don't have to do? I don't have to be involved in the lawmaking business. I could just be in the law-ignoring business. Prosecutors won't enforce the laws that I don't like. Game, set, match. And so they create these little fiefdoms, little dictatorships. They enforce the laws they feel like enforcing. They don't enforce the ones they don't feel like enforcing. It's uneven application, of course, of the law. Far too many of these, quote, Soros prosecutors, they decide who to prosecute on the basis of things like immutable characteristics rather than the merits. So it's a complete disaster across the country. And so here's an example where you have a sitting governor saying, enough, enough. Insofar as I have any control over this, you're out. I'm suspending you. And in the meantime, hopefully lives improve in Hillsborough County, Tampa, Florida. Now, we're going to talk coming up with the attorney general of a different state, of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Jason Meares. He'll join us at 5 o'clock today. And I want to ask him about this. I have a number of questions for him. But I want to ask him about this, too. What do you make of this? What can be done? Remember when he came into office, He did the same thing. When Meares came in office, he, to the extent that he had control over this, he fired 30 attorneys working across the state for the for the Commonwealth of Virginia. He fired them like that. And what did the left do? They freaked out again. They freaked. How dare you? Cleaning house. Baby, clean house. If it's within your capability and you're doing it in the not out of any corrupt interest, not out of serving yourself, but instead serving the people of the Commonwealth, or in the case of Florida, serving the people of Hillsborough County, do it. Do it. Pull the trigger. Save the people. It makes all the sense in the world. This is Ronald Reagan firing the air traffic controllers. You're not going to show up to work. You're gone. We're going to hire somebody else to do the job. We're going to bring somebody else in. And so if prosecutors aren't doing their jobs, if you can fire them, fire them. If it's suspension, if you can, if all you got to do is put them on ice, do that. If it's prosecute them, prosecute them. This is negligence on the part of these prosecutors. They're not going to enforce laws that are written on the books. Who made them king? Nobody. So to the extent state law or Commonwealth law can enable you to take it to them, do it. You watch what's happening in Loudoun County. They're going after a Soros-funded prosecutor there, Buddha Bibberai. They've been fighting tooth and nail. The state says you got to get a certain number of signatures in order to file the petition to be able to begin the process. And it's been arduous. It's been tough. Fairfax County, Steve Descano, all these guys. The citizens are sick of the lawlessness at the hands of these prosecutors. So they're fighting back. And they're doing what they can. And this is where we'll talk to Jason Meares coming up about this at 5. You know, what's the strategy here? What more can be done to help right these wrongs? So great sign out of Ron DeSantis today, and hopefully it's instructive for other Republicans or Democrats, if they can ever find their brains, across the country, about the way that you should govern, which is for the people's interests. It's very straightforward. Very straightforward. Does it serve the community or not? Is that person doing their job or not? More people should be fired for incompetence. How many government employees are you aware of just around you? Maybe you work in a federal government or a state government, local government office, and you're thinking, my God, why is the taxpayer paying for that person? Meritocracy, baby. Give us people who can do the job. Get rid of everybody else. And if you're not doing it, if you're a state prosecutor, if it's political, if you're just lazy, doesn't matter. Clear them out. So that's a good sign. I'm encouraged by it. Let's see what happens next. This is a good story out of New York City. Because if the if law enforcement isn't going to be available, prosecutors aren't going to help you. If the Democrats who run the city are going to make it much more dangerous, maybe a private citizen can spring into action and save the day. A mixed martial arts fighter had just gotten off the subway. He was walking to his boxing instructor job this past Wednesday morning, last Wednesday morning, apparently, according to the New York Post. When he saw a man by the name of Samuel Frazier sucker punch a construction worker. And I'll let him tell you the story. This MMA fighter's name is Ro Malabanan. And he saw this go down and he intervened. Take a listen.
Story time. I just got out of the subway and I was on Broadway and Prince heading to work. And two guys were walking towards me. A third guy showed up out of nowhere and just sucker punches one of the guy and punches him in the side of the face. And the guy that punched him in the face was walking towards me, and I kept my eye on him to make sure, obviously, he doesn't try anything on me. So he passed me. I checked up on the guy that he just punched, and I was like, yo, you okay? He's like, no, I'm not okay. I was like, all right, call the cops. And then out of nowhere, two guys just rolled up and was like, yo, you okay? He's like, yeah, that guy's been punching people down Broadway. He punched a couple of people. I was like, oh, word? He's like, yo, we got to take him out. I'm like, all right, I'm down.
I mean, this guy, I love how this is already going. And I don't know, this is like the story. It's always great when you get an MMA fighter who's like, he just does the right thing. You know, who's there, happens to be there. Nobody knows what he's capable of. His whole body's a weapon.
So we start following him, and then he was like a block away. So I ran after him. He just, like, my jiu-jitsu instincts just kicked in. I jumped on his back. He tried to swing me off of him, but for those of you that don't know, seatbelt position, dragged him down to the floor, and I immediately took his back and pinned him to the ground.
You got a good pin right to the pavement. Amazing. You know, just imagine being this drunk idiot. He's like walking down the street, sucker punching people, you know. And this guy, an MMA fighter, comes flying in out of nowhere, a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, a yellow belt in judo. He's a boxing instructor. He gets you in the seatbelt position and then takes you to the ground, pins you down. And he held him there until the cops showed up and they arrested the guy. And what are the chances that that would have happened if Mr. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu wasn't there? Probably very small. You know, the NYPD is trying to do its job as much as it can, but they can only catch so many things. And this guy sucker punching people. The story would probably end with this guy gets away. Now, I don't know what happens next. I mean, he gets cuffed, he gets brought in, and then some stupid prosecutor releases the guy. He's back on the street punching people in the face again. But in the meantime, at least once, some great American jumps on the guy and pins him down and says, okay, there are consequences for your actions. So that's a heck of a story. That's a heck of a story. We've got a lot of trouble across the country because of these district attorneys, like I said, and these Soros-funded attorneys. In San Francisco, they got rid of Chesa Boudin earlier this year, led by especially the Asian American populace of San Francisco. They were like, enough. We hate this crime. We hate this crime in our city. We hate the situation where no laws are being enforced. So they tossed Chesa Boudin. And here's an update for you on what's going on in San Francisco, and hopefully it's all for the better. The San Francisco District Attorney Brooke Jenkins announced yesterday that she will be reversing the plea offers that her predecessor, Chesa Boudin, had made to drug dealers in the city. She revoked over 30 plea offers made by former San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin. The DA's office, Daily Caller report here, announced it will begin applying a weight limit threshold of 5 grams of drugs to prevent drug dealers from being referred to a lower city court system, according to a news release from Jenkins' office. The new policy also makes additional penalties available against people dealing drugs within 1,000 feet of a school and allows San Francisco prosecutors to ask the court for pretrial detention in what they call extreme fentanyl dealing cases, according to the release. Remember, Chesa Boudin wasn't even like charging people for fentanyl dealing. They weren't charging anybody for killing San Franciscans with that horrific toxin. And now the new lady, well, she's signaling it's time to actually start enforcing the law. May it yield improvements for a once beautiful city. Coming up, Jason Johnson is the president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, and he'll explore how George Soros is messing up our country. Well, good afternoon to you. Make that 3:35 here on News Talk 105.9 WMAL, where we are making sense of the news. Coming up, Owen Jensen from EWTN at 4 o'clock. 4:30, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. We'll talk to him about gain-of-function research. That's some dangerous stuff. Jason Meares is here, the Attorney General of Virginia, at 5 o'clock. And then at 5:30, the great Julie Kelly, who watched Christopher Wray's testimony today before the United States Senate. We've got some highlights for you coming up. And you can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL.
The Constitution of Florida has vested the veto power in the governor, not in individual state attorneys. And so when you flagrantly violate your oath of office, when you make yourself above the law, you have violated your duty, you have neglected your duty, and you are displaying a lack of competence to be able to reform those duties. And so today we are suspending State Attorney Andrew Warren, effective immediately.
That's Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, suspending the Hillsborough County State Attorney Andrew Warren, getting rid of him because he's just not doing his job. Unfortunately, that's a trend. That's a trend. Across the country, there are prosecutors who are sitting in positions of true power who are not actually doing their jobs. Many of them backed by the billionaire, foreign-born George Soros. He's born in Hungary, now an American citizen, and he buys up all of these prosecutors across the country. What has it done to the country? Well, let's explore it with our next guest, Jason Johnson, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, who joins us now. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Vince. Good to be with you.
How important, if we can just get to the basics here, how important is it to have a prosecutor that actually prosecutes crimes in your hometown?
Well, it's critical, and it's something that until a few years ago, I think we all took for granted that the role of the prosecutor is to apply the law and prosecute people who have violated the law. It was sort of a ministerial position that certainly has discretion, but that discretion has never included rewriting the laws or essentially revoking or removing the criminal laws from books entirely, which is what this new breed of prosecutors are doing.
So, and that discretion that prosecutors have, it allows for like assessing an allegation and saying, look, I don't have enough evidence to win in court on this charge, so we won't pursue that in favor of other charges that we have more evidence for. That's a better use of our time. That's what that discretion's for, right?
It's a prosecutorial discretion is exactly, you're exactly right. It's to be applied on a case-by-case basis, looking holistically at what laws were, you know, violated, what the strength of the evidence is, what you know, how important is it to society to redress this particular violation in with this particular evidence. And it never has been just a wholesale applicable to laws that individual prosecutors just don't like, because they're not lawmakers. They apply the law, they don't make it.
One of the recent developments, as you point to how recently this started being a problem, is that you now have very rich left-wing billionaires who are funding the campaigns of prosecutors who don't enforce the law nationwide, and chief among them is George Soros. Give us a sense of how influential Soros is in terms of all of the prosecutors across the country and what that's doing to the communities that he's played a part in.
Well, so we found that there are about 75 prosecutors that received some support from Soros. In many cases, the support was direct money contributions to campaigns. In other cases, it was like Soros or Soros-linked groups invited these prosecutors into the club, so to speak, and they go off on these junkets around the world and talk about ways, I guess, to ruin our cities, ways to not apply the law, allow people to run roughshod over society. It seems to be they're all on the same page there. They created this sort of network. And so these 75 prosecutors represent about 1 in 5 Americans. So 1 in 5 Americans live in a jurisdiction that has one of these prosecutors. And that includes about half of our 50 most populous cities of the United States. So it's very extensive.
And do you get the impression, if it's possible to even assess the motivations here, is this like, you know, like a Batman villain? Are these guys agents of chaos? Or is there some sort of good faith understanding of what they think they're doing?
It's at this point, because we've seen the results, I think you could make the point that in the beginning, before we really entered into this experiment, you know, half a decade ago or so, that there could have been some belief, some naive belief, that applying this prosecutorial philosophy would somehow make society better. But we've seen what happens. I mean, we have seen violent crime in particular explode in these cities. We've seen disorder. If anyone goes to a big city, I don't care where you go, certainly anything on the East Coast where I've been in the last couple of years, the cities are in decay. There's trash everywhere. People are panhandling. There's pot smoke in the air everywhere. I mean, no one is following any sort of regular laws of society. So everyone knows that at this point. So to continue to maintain that this is some sort of panacea, I think we're beyond that now. So it does appear that there's some bad faith involved. This wasn't a really hopeful experiment. This is actually an intentional strategy to get us where we are and sadly where we might be going in the future.
It is sad. What happens when prosecutors stop enforcing the law? What impact does that have on the men and women of law enforcement who are on the street, who are tasked with making arrests and presenting evidence to these prosecutors of what the crimes were?
Well, first of all, it's demoralizing. I mean, you know, police officers are going out there and they're risking their life and their safety and their reputation and their freedom, actually, to sort of go out on a limb for society, put their necks out, enforce the law, even in the face of that danger. And when they do that, and then they find that the people that they've arrested just are released, you know, sometimes even violent criminals are released with an ankle bracelet, put on probation, charges dropped. It's completely demoralizing. And it puts these officers at even greater legal peril, because when they go out and enforce a law that the prosecutor has made it their practice not to actually prosecute, that sets them up for allegations of wrongful arrest, allegations of excessive force, other Fourth Amendment violations. And so it's destructive to the entire system from beginning to end. It's really leading to, you know, some of what we see happening in policing with difficulty recruiting and retaining our best officers.
But if you become accustomed to knowing that there are no consequences for certain criminal acts, wouldn't cops stop enforcing the law for those acts?
They do. I mean, that, you know, the administration of most law enforcement agencies, if the prosecutor has made it their official position, we are not going to prosecute trespassing, drug possession, prostitution, you name it, then they're going to direct their officers not to enforce it anymore because it puts them in too much peril, really, to no effect. So you're exactly right. It's as if those laws have been removed from the books entirely.
Yeah. What is the relationship between small crimes and big crimes? You know, we hear about broken windows policing and trying to, you know, basically catch people early in their I don't want to say criminal career, but when they break the law, let them know when the stakes are much lower that there are consequences for that so that they don't go on to commit bigger crimes later on thinking they have a permission slip to do that. What is the relationship between those things?
So you're referencing broken windows philosophy, which has been proven to be an accurate, an effective strategy, rather, and it's often conflated with what other people call zero tolerance policing, which is not what it is. What it is that it's the recognition that when communities are in decay and law enforcement and the government doesn't care what people do, they let them do whatever they want, whether it's use drugs in public, prostitution, defecating on the sidewalk, that people will take that as a sign that no one cares, and then they can start robbing people, and then they can start escalating into higher levels of violence. That is what broken windows philosophy dictates, and it's accurate. And these prosecutors think that, you know, they're doing society a favor by letting people do whatever they want. But not only is it so unattractive and it reflects so poorly of our society. It makes people not want to come into cities and patronize businesses. But you're exactly right. It escalates into higher levels of crime, including violence. And we're seeing it happen. It's not, you know, we're not guessing at what might happen. We're actually seeing it unfold in front of us.
And as a community becomes more unsafe, the chances that you'll have someone want to set up or at least maintain a small business in that community, it plummets, right?
One would think. I mean, I have to imagine that in cities, and I've been there, I'm sure you have too, I'm sure your listeners have,
yeah,
in New York and Philly and Baltimore and D.C., you know, businesses are closed, and it's not just because of COVID. No one wants to go there. People are avoiding cities. They're afraid of crime. They're turned off by the disorder and the chaos and the decay. And it's not good for anyone, and it's certainly not good for the public health either.
How much has racial component overtaken the American criminal justice system? Because we hear a lot of conversations about equity, and it's not just in law enforcement. It's in, like, for instance, in school and discipline. There's this theory that, well, certain people of certain skin colors are disproportionately punished, you know, with no examination of underlying culpability. Like, you know, did they break the law? Did they break a rule? They should be punished, I would think. How much does race interfere in this conversation nationwide?
It's a pernicious trend that everyone, not everyone, but the activists on the equity activists are looking for equality of outcomes. So no
yes.
matter what, they're looking for the outcomes to be the same and to fall equally along racial lines. They're looking for no more than 13% of persons arrested or entering your criminal justice system to be African American. And that's it. That's the end of the analysis. They're not looking at anything else. Who are highly victimized in our system, and they're not looking beyond that.
Well, that's exactly right. So if you back off on enforcing the law in the most criminally victimized communities, all you're doing is accelerating the extent to which they're victimized. You're making things worse. Like, so in this example, precisely what we're talking about, if a black community has excess criminality and you decide to start pulling back on enforcing the law for race reasons, you're going to get more black Americans hurt.
And we're already seeing that. That's already in the data.
Yes.
So we're already seeing violence escalate in the communities that can least afford it, that are most inclined to violence, but also that can least afford to suffer from additional violence. We're seeing more black people killed, not less. And so the more we push this equity narrative that we have to turn down the policing in communities that actually, by the way, have the highest levels of violence already, it's getting worse. So you have to kind of ask yourself, and I think you're asking your audience, you know, how can you say you're for equality and equity when you are championing policies that are the worst possible policies from that perspective? And it's a head scratcher.
It's so shallow and destructive. And it's, so what's the state of law enforcement nationwide? I'm talking to Jason Johnson here. He's the president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. You talk about morale going down in areas where prosecutors don't support the police. You know, how would you assess the health of police departments nationwide right now?
It's very, very poor. It's the worst that I've ever seen it. And I'm not saying that to be dramatic. Law enforcement is facing a crisis. We have, law enforcement officers are looking for the exit. They're looking to leave the profession and go somewhere else. Some have to hang, some are close enough to a pension that they're going to kind of hang on and see their careers through. But the other thing is very few people are coming in a career that used to be very competitive to actually enter the career. It's no longer the case. And the numbers are down. Virtually every city in America is facing major, major deficits in manpower. Mm-hmm. And there's no end in sight. And so what they're going to do is lower the standards. And we're going to wind up with law enforcement officers that shouldn't be law enforcement officers, which is exactly the opposite. Just like the last conversation we're having about equity.
Yes.
It's exactly the opposite of what we should all want. We should want to increase standards, not lower standards.
No, that's exactly right.
We're heading the wrong way.
You know, it's funny. You know, the Biden was supposed to, before he got sick last week, he was supposed to give a speech in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, where he claims he wanted to, use federal money to encourage the hiring of 100,000 cops nationwide. And of course, the reason he's doing this is because he's trying to mitigate the damage of his party's obvious association with an anti-cop attitude, an anti-law enforcement attitude that's well developed over these past several years. But after he came out and said that, the LA Times was mad about it. They said, no, don't do that, because that'll mean 100,000 more Derek Chauvins. Which, of course, that's a ludicrous position for the LA Times to take, and offensive, I think, to law enforcement officers broadly. But to the point that you just made, Jason Johnson, if you are deterring talented applicants from joining the field of law enforcement, if you'd like crappier cops, if you'd like cops who make bad decisions with deadly weapons, then go ahead and demonize law enforcement so that they have to lower their standards to bring in people who shouldn't be cops.
And that's what's happening. I mean, we need to keep a close eye on this, and I do. But we're going to see standards low. We're already seeing it, maybe not officially, but we're seeing positions being filled much less competitively because there's more vacancies and there are fewer applicants. So, the basic economic equation applies. You've got lots of positions open and a few people to fill it. They're going to lower the bar, and that's certainly what's happening. It's going to continue to happen, unfortunately. And that's not a good recipe in an era where, if nothing else, we should all be looking at ways that we can actually improve the profession.
Yeah.
And we're heading the wrong way.
Big time. All right. Well, Jason Johnson, thank you. This is about as important of a topic as any going on in the country right now. Thanks for helping us navigate it. All right. Let's take a phone call here. Ryan calling in from Woodbridge. He's on line 3. Ryan, you're on the Vince Colanay Show. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing, Vince?
I'm good, Ryan. Thanks for your call. Hey, what's on your mind?
I heard your last guest and he was talking about the degradation of police departments and across the nation. I'm just calling in to corroborate that story because it's not a story. It's a fact. I was prior service, airborne artillery, handful of the guys that I still am in contact with. They went into police department, One specifically is down in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he is one of the active investigators for recruitment. And I can't tell you how many times that he's talked to us and told us, his numbers are down. The quality of candidates that they're allowing to slip through is just disgusting. There's a lot of things that are going on, and it's really frustrating for the boys in blue to actually just suck it up and hopefully they investigate people, background check, stuff like that, that they get a quality candidate or they can find someone that can turn their life around. But 9 times out of 10, it's not, and their numbers are suffering. The same thing here in in D.C.
Yeah, no, for sure. And especially in the big cities, places like D.C., if things grow out of control, a lot of cops put in for transfers. They'll move to towns that support them more.
The recent Muriel Bowser, where, you know, she was saying that she's going to get all this money for our local area, Nova cops, D.C. cops, and they just can't fill the spots.
Do you think you said you're prior military?
Yes.
Yeah. So in the military, when they're doing recruitment, and now we've already got the same issue in the military, it's like they're struggling to find people because the left has so successfully demonized all of these important institutions that the good people don't want to join them. So they have to lower the standards to get people to join them at all. And when they do that, they have to start issuing waivers for things like, have you committed a crime in the past? Or do you have tattoos, right, for instance, in the military? Or have you smoked marijuana? Or do you enact, you know, so they basically start giving waivers for all these things that they used to not allow. Is that happening in the cops, too?
It is. There's so many different kinds of waivers that he's talked about. And it's just a broad swath of things that really are head turners.
Big time. It's worrisome. And this is the left on the march. Thank you, Ryan. Once again, you destroy these institutions. You degrade them. You mock them. You tear them down. And in the end, people don't want to be associated with institutions that they believe to be fully broken thanks to your efforts to break them. It's disheartening, and it has to turn around. It's the only way the country can function. You need good law enforcement. You need a court system that works. You need a justice system that's believable. You need academic institutions that actually teach academics. The list goes way on. And we'll continue next. Coming up, Owen Jensen will join us from EWTN. He's been trying to get honest answers out of the White House. That's a difficult job.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.